My Life Is. I'm your host, Niles McFlower, and I have a Merry Christmas today and a Happy Holidays in general. And today I thought we would talk about that very subject, spiritual holy days. You might be surprised that originally all holidays were considered holy days, and that's how we get that word, actually. And I thought today we would talk about the relationship between what we consider to be holidays and how they have evolved and what the spiritual principles are behind holy days. Now, you might say, whoa, that kind of sounds a little strange. Well, maybe it is. But after all, I thought it would be appropriate because today is Christmas Day, right? For those of you who are listening live. Now, some people obviously tune into this show and listen to it afterwards, but then you can apply it to your next Christmas Day or any other holy day in your life. So first of all, I want to talk about joy. And interestingly, joy is a word that's very strongly associated with the spiritual side of Christmas. And I wonder if you know why. Ah, I gave you a few seconds to think about that. And the principle of joy, let me define it, and then I think you'll understand how it fits in. The principle of joy is the following. And for those of you who have read Life's in Meaning, you know from that book, if you go to the glossary, if you've read some of the chapters, that it's all defined in there. And what I'm going to explain is something you may have read already. But for the rest of you who haven't read it, this may be a little bit of a surprise. And that is that joy is something that comes to us from us observing and having a perception of others becoming more spiritual. In other words, when someone else, either from something we've done or someone else has done, has increased the spiritual nature of others, and that includes them becoming more loving or more truthful or who knows, all kinds of virtuous ways, we experience joy. We experience joy by becoming aware of that. Let me say it one more time in a little bit different way. Let's say that you observe a family member, I'm going to choose someone personal right now, who has suddenly become aware of the maybe deficiencies in themselves, and the desire to become more cooperative and appreciative of the rest of the family. This happens all the time, of course, in families. And as they do this, and they make some suggestions, changes to themselves, and affect other people around them by doing this, you would experience joy. That's right. Even if you were not necessarily the cause directly of their change. A lot of people say, well, I get that one. I am involved in it. But joy actually comes from just being aware that others are getting closer to becoming more like God. That's the basic idea here. And so there's all kinds of circumstances in which this may happen. All right. Now, when we think about that, that's a wonderful thing. And one of the circumstances about holy days is that they focus on exactly that element, trying to become closer to our Creator, God, of sometimes a specific religion, sometimes not necessarily involved with a specific religion. But when others are doing this, we become more joyful. Wow. And a lot of people think that, well, joy is just giving or joy is just receiving. Actually, it's neither. Again, it is this perception of someone becoming closer to their Creator. Now, what if we individually, ourselves, recognize that we are becoming closer to our Creator? It doesn't become joyful until we have an effect through that process on others. So just us feeling closer to our Creator does not produce the joy, but if we create it more in others because we found it in ourselves, that will. So you, again, this is something that is really other-directed, and you can't get it alone. The reason it's so important to have holy days is because they involve other people. And now you might say, well, what about things like Yom Kippur, where people are sitting alone and trying to figure out how they can change their sins and et cetera. Well, if you know much about that, you know that part of the time you do that, but the rest of the time you actually are with a congregation, you're with family and friends, and you're not focused on anything other than your relationship between them and you and God. And so even in those circumstances, when we think of that as being a kind of solitary moment, it's only a part of the experience. Holy days are supposed to be communal days where people get together and have an interaction of some sort to increase, in effect, joy among all peoples and to produce other effects as well. But I thought I'd get to the joy first because I always sometimes get to that last, and a lot of people say, well, why did you cover that first? Okay, today I covered it first because it is Christmas. Okay, so what other things do I want to say about holy days? Holy days were originally designed to bring about a change in the general, we'll say, direction of people, moving them from a material and selfish stance into a more spiritual and unselfish or focused out stance. And this was the purpose of it. Now, was that purpose known by all those who participated? Not necessarily. It was known by those who created the quote-unquote holy days, which we today call holidays. Now, today, our understanding and thought process about this oftentimes has to do with giving gifts and receiving gifts and even the obligatory nature of doing so, as well as the fun part and joy part of, quote-unquote, having somebody else receive what we give them. But the important element here is there's no real joy until they receive being more part of God. And if they don't receive the gifts that we give them in a way that helps them to become more giving themselves, then there won't be joy from that exchange. Very important idea. Something that most people don't realize. So it's important not to give people so much the things that they want, because sometimes what they want is very selfish and personal, but giving them what they need to be closer to God by becoming a co-creator in some way, creating more virtue through all their exchanges in their life, through whatever we give them. That's a tough one, isn't it? Particularly if you have children. This is really an important way of teaching children, an important way to give them something that is long-lasting. Yet, the world, the way it operates is, you know, they watch television, they see this this new electronic game they can get to play on their television, and that's what they want. But it may not be at all something that is going to help them to become a greater, more, we'll call it conscious, loving, and creative virtue person. That's a tough one. And I would suggest that we pay much more attention to that side of the giving nature during this time of year and any other part of the year whenever we're choosing to give to others. It is possibly counterproductive to give, especially children, some of these types of toys, games, etc., that increase their violent nature, make them interested in purian and we'll even say totally adult-like, if you can even call it that, subjects. And worse, destructive, non-constructive, highly violent ways of stimulating them. You might say, oh, but that's what they like. they like all that stuff. It's wonderful because they can spend hours, you know, and they get better eye-hand coordination. Somebody proved that just a year ago. Oh, sure, you get better eye-hand coordination in killing people. That's going to be very helpful in your future life. Actually, it's a kind of no-brainer that we are not necessarily helping children or other adults, if we're adults ourselves, to become more virtuous by giving them only the things that are stimulating to them and quote-unquote fun. Those things, while exciting at the moment, may be highly destructive in the long run. And you could say, well, what am I going to do? Everybody else is doing it. Everybody else is making those games and doing this stuff and they're doing this other things. And what am I going to do? Well, my suggestion is the following. That when we give, we make the criteria based upon the principles, the highest principles that we have, and we also teach. And one of the things to teach is the difference between the things that are wonderful and the things that are destructive. That doesn't mean you don't necessarily ever have the destructive things around. Maybe the point of this whole exercise is to even allow and have some destructive things so that they can be compared to the things that are constructive. And if you hit the right constructive elements, those other things will fall away quickly and they won't matter. Yesterday, just last night, I saw a movie. It's a pretty old one, actually. It was about the fellow who made all the Gilbert toys. His name was A.C. Gilbert. And his idea of toys were toys that both educated and created imagination and designed in ways so that children, I guess adults, could find ways of expressing themselves which would be helpful and to them and to others, and to make them into something that was beyond what they were before they got what they got. Oh, it was a great movie, actually. I thought it was. But the movie, again, was about a guy, and it's about his real life. With, you know, they always embellish or change something in a movie from real. But it was pretty close, because you could tell that this movie was about a true subject, not somebody just writing. And I remember, I'm old enough to do this, all of those toys. Now, I don't know if most of them are made anymore, that this guy created, because I ended up getting a lot of them. I was one of the more fortunates, maybe. And because of that, I have a background that started in engineering and physics and science. I mean, at really early age, like, it's going to sound crazy, 2 and 3 years old. Yeah, I actually had a lot of those toys at that age. And so I was very fortunate because I was able to use these to be creative. Now, was I creative always in a way which was spiritual? No. Not necessarily because my family was in that direction. I did so a little bit later in life, but it would have been great if I had had that help as well. Like, this knowledge and this experience that you have, you can build consciousness with, and with that you can help others to become more understanding that there really is a creator. Eventually, I came to that conclusion, not too long after I got those, on my own, by seeing a connection between all of the elements of the sciences, and in some cases, other parts of our society, and God, and there being a God. So that was the interesting part. At any rate, it would be great if we could have more of that, and less of the destructive gifts that are so oftentimes purchased, particularly for young people. I know that was an aside, but I thought it was important maybe to mention something I haven't really talked about much on the air. Okay, so if we're going to call and work with spiritual days, call them truly holy days, then they need to be expressions of our Creator, and they need to improve the way life is moving more towards a spiritual existence than a harsh, destructive one. Some people will call it evolutionary, you know. Evolution is one of the ways that God chooses to create life. But eventually, once humans are involved and have control over the kingdom that is quote-unquote evolving, it's our job to bring it to a higher level instead of destroying it and misusing it, and to bring our kingdom, along with those others, to all together into higher levels of being closer to the expression of our Creator. So this was the design of Holy Days. It was the main purpose of them. And, of course, they didn't exactly stay on track. Many of them became more material-based, more fundamentally couched in some kind of material ritual, not necessarily a spiritual one. And unfortunately may have become a means of some religions trying to get more power and money and more people joining them. So this is not a good thing. Some of you may not know this as an example, but Christmas Day is not likely the day that Jesus Christ was born. There's pretty good evidence that he was really born sometime during the spring. Matter of fact, he may have been born about the time that people celebrated his death. So the interesting thing about this is you might say, well, why did they pick Christmas Day? Well, originally, the Christmas Day holiday was the winter solstice, which is approximately the 21st of December. And that day was a pagan holiday that got people focused on being able to prepare themselves for the more barren times of the winter, and to also prepare people to live more frugally and to support each other as a community, because food may become scarce during the winter time. This was some of the holy reasons. A lot of people think it was some kind of pagan orgy holiday or something like that. And my research on that does not support that. It seems as though that is not the case. So it wasn't like it was some terrible, horrible holiday that pagans were doing and the Christians came in and usurped it, but also converted all the people over to Christianity. I know that's some kind of story that is held. It isn't true based upon what I've found. But what is true is that it was and did have a holy context. It wasn't Christian at all. It was based upon spirit gods and other things that depended upon also what specific religion and which country we're even talking about, because this was multi-country. And it was mostly to try to get people to cooperate and work together through the harsh coming times of the winter, which is always a time of, we'll say, food supplies diminishing, more illness, other kinds of things like that, and where the need to give and help your neighbor became a survival mechanism among society in general. That was a good day to pick for Christians to be the beginning of their celebrating the birth of Christ. And they included the merits of the holy day from the pagans. It isn't, though, that they were coming in to save the pagans by Christianizing them. They were trying to use this holiday, or holy day, as a marking of the same kinds of things they wanted to say about Christianity, but adding something very special. And that is that Christ's message was a little different than the other religions that had come before him, be they pagan, quote-unquote, religions, which is usually meant that they were polytheistic. They had a lot of different gods or demigods, etc. Or they were monotheistic, like the Jewish religion might have been, or Zoroastrianism. So if you look at this from the standpoint of making sense out of it, it does make sense that choosing December 21st, which became the 25th, by the way, that's mostly because calendars weren't all that accurate. But at any rate, we'll call it around the winter solstice day. Choosing that day made every bit of sense because of the special nature of Christianity. And that is that Christ brought in something that was unique to any and all religions, and that was the idea of giving in ways that we could call to be a relationship with God than a relationship with individuals. His way of giving, his thought of giving, was a new kind of love. We'll call it a unconditional, more unconditional, and universal type of love. And this type of love, associating it as the real crux or foundation of a religion, was new. All religions before this did not have that as at its foundation. So that was his unique giving. Now, when that became part of the holy day of Christmas, Christmas also took on this higher status of giving. There was already giving around this particular holy day when it was more pagan. But the giving dealt with things like food and shelter and helping people to stay healthy and warm if they were in a colder climate, etc. It didn't deal so much with the concept of giving from the heart to help others to become better themselves and also to be closer to their God. This is the thing that Christianity, as a religion, brought in new, and it bumped the holiday that was the old pagan holiday into a new and higher status. That status was, for the first time, to make a day, a holy day, that got people into a much higher state of consciousness than had happened before by celebrating this particular day of the year. So this is an important change, and the religion itself offered this change to those people who practiced it, but the holy day brought it to people who were not practicing it because it became ubiquitous. It is so strong throughout the world that in places where there are very few Christians, almost everybody knows about Christmas. Isn't that weird? I don't think so, but isn't it weird? Yeah, it is kind of weird because you know, we don't know about most of the holidays of other religions, right? But most people, no matter where they live, know about Christmas. And that is something to really think about. And that came from the fact that Christ brought in this new kind of love that the holy day became identified with. And today the holiday is a shadow of it, unfortunately, in some circles. I hope we go back to the more original understanding and the more original purpose, because this holiday that we talk about has become amazingly commercial, and it's missing some of the real depth that was there and still could be there if we choose to use it as the kind of day it could be. And I bet you didn't know some of this stuff, so it's most interesting to talk about it. Now, I don't want to talk only about Christmas, but I thought that since it is Christmas Day, at least for those of you who are listening live, this is an appropriate thing to say something about. What about other holy days? Well, you know, the interesting thing about this is that every day could be a holy day. Every day could be a day of joy and a day of great meaning for those who are attempting to get closer to being a co-creator with God all the time that they exist. Then their days become much richer and the joy flows. You don't necessarily experience joy right away, but you will eventually experience it. So every day could be that way. Now, should we still have special holy days or holidays for those who prefer to use that word today? I think so, because although it would be nice, maybe the utopian or the perfect idea would be to have, let's just have it every day. We'll just try our best and do the best we can. Human beings are not so perfect. And it's enough for many people to maybe have something every other month that is like a holy day than to try to do it every day, because when they try to do something at that level and they're not spiritually disciplining themselves, their failure rate is much greater than their success. So when you have that kind of consistent failure rate, the results can be a negative rather than a positive in terms of helping to develop virtues in people. You don't want a high failure rate because it really discourages people from trying in the first place. And then the whole system may fail. I think this was the original concept of why some of the more conscious people in different societies decided to pick certain days to be holy days rather than all days, because they recognized that people just can't keep up. And the failures were a worse circumstance than the occasional successes. Better to have a few days where people are much closer to their creator than having a lot of days where they keep failing to do that. So that's my opinion. I don't have any empirical evidence about that, but I think it's a pretty good explanation of why it's best to probably have a limited number of holy days right now while we're still struggling in this world to increase our consciousness and be closer to our Creator. Anyway, we're going to take a break for right now, and when we come back, I'm going to talk about some of the more, we'll say, interesting things that you may not have known about spiritual holy days, and also some of the ways that we can make a difference in this world in the future using some of the concepts I've talked about so far and some new ones I'm going to add. So we'll be back in about 2 minutes and 10 seconds, give or take, from right now.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower, McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
We're back. This is Why Life Is. I'm your host, Niles McFlower. We're trying to get our engineering correct here. I didn't know I was supposed to just kind of come in on the fade out there. We're working it out. Used to be I couldn't hear what was going on, but they've changed that recently, very recently. And so now I can hear our own commercials, which is pretty neat, actually. You can imagine trying to do a radio show 1,000 miles away or so and not knowing exactly what's going on the other side. It's an interesting problem sometimes. Much better way of doing it. So anyway, let me give you some ideas of things that we might want to consider. And I would suggest that all of us think about this as a possibility. First of all, when there are active wars taking place, now, I don't know if you're aware of this, but there used to be temporary armistices during certain holidays or holy days, especially Christmas, during the two world wars. This was true. Since that time, it has not happened that I'm aware of, and at any rate. I think it happened once in Vietnam, but in the Vietnam War, 1 year. But my suggestion is that there be some type of extension of holy days whenever there are wars, not necessarily covering religious holidays, although if you have to start there, that's okay with me. But rather, once a month, there's an armistice for 2 days. And you might say, well, that's pretty crazy. Well, not really. I mean, if both sides truly are not going to shoot each other or drop any bombs on the other person or whatever other country, then fine, why not do it? And you could say, but how can you trust them, you know? Well, I mean, if this is a consensus made by the international quote-unquote community, and if you break the rules, then maybe all the nations come in and prevent this from continuing or whatever. So you would have real serious consequences if you were to unilaterally break the rules. But nonetheless, I think it's possible to achieve this because we've done it before. And it's nothing recent. That's the problem. And we've moved further away from it. Now, you might say, well, what could happen, you know, in 2 days? Well, what could happen is that when people realize that they can stop fighting and still go on, sometimes it kind of dawns on them that maybe fighting isn't really the answer. Maybe this isn't going to solve the problem, and it gives them a little breathing room to consider alternatives. And we don't use this tool the way it was used even 100 years ago or less. So it's kind of a strange thing. It's something that was pretty effective and useful, has diminished. And that's most unfortunate, and I can tell you why it has diminished, in my opinion. It's because holy days have become holidays. And nobody is going to bother to stop a war to go shopping or to go to a movie. But I do believe people will stop a war to experience a bit of joy and peace and reflection, and maybe the contemplation of some alternative way of responding, and certainly to decrease the amount of killing and hostilities, even if it's resumed. Because that's what happened after the armistices. In most cases, there's actually, for a week or two, a reduction in the number of deaths after even they begin to fight again. Because people have to kind of get used to killing each other. And so this is a good thing, and it could save lives, and it may eventually turn some wars around. It's something to consider, and it's worthwhile to put it into play. It'd be easy enough to start with the United Nations being as they are at the present time, nothing more than what they are, but they're not great. But this is something they can actually probably institute, and I don't know why they haven't actually. You say, well, don't they have it in the charter? So, you know, great. It's in the charter, but nobody does anything about it. Well, that's not going to do us any good. No, I'm talking about functionality, not some kind of it looks good, let's put it in there, you know, kind of thing. I don't care what it says, I care what people do. So that's one of my first suggestions about improving for the future holy days. I have some other ones. Now, you notice, again, I'm not suggesting that everybody practice a holy day every day, even to stop wars. Because, again, we're not perfect. We don't have the discipline on an average spiritually to do this yet in this world. And, of course, if we did, we probably wouldn't be having any wars anyway. Okay. Next step. My suggestion is that each spiritual holy day, especially if it is connected to a religion, be connected to one of the world problems that we have, such as health problems from parasites and certain types of terrible diseases, problems from food and water issues, water contamination, food shortages and contamination as well, and things like that. So we associate one of these serious problems in the world with a specific holiday or holy day that we already celebrate in, and we pick a whole wide variety from all the different ones that already exist. I don't suggest that we make up new ones because we've got too many of those already. We have Earth Day this, and we have Weather Day that, and can change this thing, and too many of those, but they're not really effective because people aren't really focused on the holiness again. And if you do too much of that, remember what I said, probably not getting ahead, you're getting behind in terms of being able to make an effective change. So let me be more specific. Let's say in this country and in some others, they celebrate Thanksgiving, not necessarily the same day we have Thanksgiving, but let's take the United States. On our Thanksgiving Day, we can decide that we're also going to celebrate how to improve the food for not just people who are eating in our country in shelters, etc., but in, we pick 10 countries where starvation, Somalia, etc., is terribly a terrible rampaging thing, you know, and that's included in the holy day or holiday, so that we structure parts of that holiday in our awareness, in our doing something to be of service to those people, to help them grow more food, to help them stop fighting among themselves, which is destructive to them being able to do so, to help them find pure water and maybe create wells that will do that for them, etc. I'm just picking that as an example because there's too many to really cover in this show. The numbers are staggering of all the issues that could be brought to bear. But this is, I give you an example because so that it could be concretely applied and it makes some sense, because the concept maybe not make sense until you see that it could actually be concretely applied and it could be quite useful. And it's on those days that we not only promote, you know, that getting together as a family thing and a community kind of support thing. We're going to go out and help feed some hungry people here. But we're going to really look into helping other people to gain some of the feeling and sense of community and joy we have by being closer to God in our holy day of Thanksgiving applied to their particular problem. They may not truly understand our particular holy or holiday, but they will get the understanding by us being able to help them to help themselves. That's what I suggest. And we pick it for, like, it could be 3 or 4 days a month that we do this, because there's enough holy days that are recognizable by enough people in this country and all other countries. And it doesn't have to be interestingly standardized for every country. So some countries might do one holiday 1 month, and other countries might do it another holiday. So you can really have this varying change. And you could even have countries of reception of the givings and the help get it more than once a year from different places, depending upon how they celebrate. different societies, different countries, different religions celebrate in different ways at different times. Actually, that's an advantage, as you can see in this situation. So that's one of the things I've thought about, that we might be able to make some changes just by using the structure we already have. Creating a new structure is dozens, if not hundreds of times more complicated and difficult than using what we've already got and just adding to it. That's always the easier thing to do, and it makes so much more sense. It saves our resources. We apply what we already have and make it more efficient in its use. What else can we use holy days for? Well, one of the things that I think is important is education. Very few people have much understanding of anything outside of what they particularly practice as a holy or holiday. Very few people. And so by gaining an understanding of where other people are at, will help to maybe quell some of the conflictive differences that we have between religions and different countries, cultures, and all kinds of issues that seem to be the plague of humanity in general. So it would be great to just in school study the holy days or holidays of a diverse range of the world. And I don't know if you've had that experience, but I actually, in a formal way, have not. I've taken all kinds of studies and social studies, et cetera, but it's never really been dealt with. And I'm not sure why. I mean, if you think about it, boy, that'd be an interesting subject, maybe. And you could incorporate it in existing classes and courses, or you can have your own course on it. I mean, literally, it's probably a big enough subject, so it could be a course. Particularly if you start doing some of the more creative things with these holy days that I suggested, using them to improve all kinds of problems in the world that are sitting out there that these holidays could come into help for. Then they'd be really interesting to study, to see what the results are and to be able to compare from one type of holy day to another, how it's effective in some ways and not effective in others. I mean, it's a tremendous idea, I think. So we are missing this in our educational venue. I have no idea why. I really don't. I'm sure some teachers, sometime, someplace have done this. I'm not saying it has never been done before. It's just that it hasn't been part of my education. You might think about that. And if you know some people that are doing it, tell others about it so that they can become a model. Because, like I said, this seems to be a rarity more than a common event. What are some of the other ideas I have? Well, at the present time, one of the problems we have in this country, in the United States, I think also in general, is that most people look at holidays as means of not working and not having to put out some kind of labor. And so the day is a day of like a rest or, you know, chill out, have fun. Do something that's quote-unquote non-responsible, whatever. This is a typical response. Now, that's a non-holy day. It is not a spiritual way of looking at holy days. And it is more the traditional, by our standards today, holiday. And what's wrong with that is that what we're doing is we're completely subduing the real existence of that day, what it means, and what it could be really used for to be of service to others. It also gives us excuses for being irresponsible. I'm not saying you shouldn't rest when, if you're overworked, take the day off because it's a holiday and rest. That's okay. I'm not chiding people about doing that. You know, it's okay. What I'm really saying here is that most people, more often than not, see these as ways of them not having to be responsible rather than ways of them finding more joy, being closer to their creator, and understanding what the real meaning of that particular holy day is. Even if it's something that's kind of a little, you know, like some people celebrate Columbus Day because he discovered the Americas. Well, kind of did, yeah. But I think the point is that it really has to do more with possibly, you know, the pride of some Italian American citizens and other things. But it also has to do with recognizing the greatness of our country. And I think that's the bigger issue that gets lost. And a lot of people say, well, if they're federal employees, they think, well, I'm sure we're glad I work for the U.S. government because today is Columbus Day and I don't have to go to work. The rest of us do, but they don't. You know, and then we say, oh, we don't have any mail today and the banks are closed because they get the day off and we don't, you know, that kind of thing. Well, that's the wrong attitude. That's where we're getting these more material-sided, non-spiritual understandings of days that should be something greater than that. And I'm not so sure it's good that we even take the day off, if we can, when we don't recognize what the meaning of that day is. And when we, because it's really taking, it's not giving. And the purpose is not to get closer to a creator. It's likely to result in the opposite effect. So that's something to also consider about the responsibility of how we celebrate and in what ways we choose a particular holiday. Even though it may not have much to do with any of our background, we can see the universal concepts involved and become more part of that. As I said, you think about things like Columbus Day. It's really about the U.S. To me, I'd rather call it U.S. Day, or the day that we celebrate what it means to be the freest country, if not the least corrupt, unfortunately, country on earth. And so we need to celebrate that. I think it's a wonderful thing that we do. And we don't, you know, there used to be a flag day. I don't think that it's kind of really celebrated. But I mean, and then people say, well, the 4th of July. I'd say that was the day we declared independence. Yeah, we declared independence, but I don't know that that really means that we are looking at our freedoms as we should. I think some people do on the 4th of July, and I think some schools teach a little bit like that. That's a good thing. Because patriotism is part of it, as well as the most important element, which is what makes this country the greatest country, I think, in the world. What makes it a great country, whether it is the greatest or not, is that it seeks liberty and freedom, and it does so for all people, and it's founded upon some of the greatest principles ever put together in all of history. Now, whether we actually apply those principles and use them, that's another story, right? But we're certainly doing what we can as far as a holiday is concerned if we recognize the true meaning and we bring it out. And if we were to identify, let's say, the 4th of July with countries that are oppressed by dictators, etc., they're trying to help them to overcome their oppression, maybe even a country like Iran. Wow, what a crazy idea, huh? On our Independence Day, we celebrate not only our independence, but ways of helping Iran, the Iranian citizens, become more independent from their dictatorial government. I'm just using them as an example. There's dozens or more countries that we might want to do the same thing with. But I'm giving you one example. Now you might say, oh, that's one of those oddball things that guy comes up with. I know, they're pretty strange ideas. I listen. But then again, if you don't think outside the box, I don't know if you're ever going to know you're inside it. Right? And that's not a good thing either. So this gives us that opportunity then to use these holy days for even more constructive ways of becoming closer to our creator and developing more and more joy within our own lives. I hope this has made some sense today. It's kind of a strange subject. I have covered this once or twice before, not on this station, but on others. And, you know, it's interesting that I haven't covered exactly this way. I usually add different things and change around what I'm saying. But even as I talk about it today, I can see that I have changed in some of my thoughts a little bit from what I thought maybe 5 or 10 years ago. So there's been some some changes in myself. Someday I'll have a program just about all my thoughts and changes in my own opinions. I'm not going to do that today. We are out of time. But I do want to mention to you that if you haven't heard about it, you can get a product called Soul Balance, which is fantastic because it literally reduces the retained energy in the body, which is always a way that you cure things and make yourself healthy. And this product is an incredible product. If you want to learn more about it, and if you want to get it, you can. I'll give you a phone number here in a second. Let me get it for you. It's somewhere. It's coming up. There it is. All right, I found it. And it is, you can get it from Life Balance Association. This is a thing you get not by necessarily buying it. You gift them money. And it's $160. That includes the shipping and everything. For one bottle, it has 135 of these tablets that you take, plus 24 other one capsules and 15 other capsules. No, another 24. Excuse me, 24 and 24. I got it right now. So 48 more capsules besides the 135 tablets. Whatever that adds up to, it's a lot. And together, they do a tremendous amount to help you balance out the chakras in your own body and to improve your ability to stay well in the things that are wrong, that might be wrong with inside you. And you can get this product by calling 602-472-5127. So that's one way you can get that particular product. Also, I want to mention that if you haven't tried it, I have been using this product for some time now, almost a year. Ideal Cell Sorption Resveratrol, it has an amazing effect on a person. It makes them younger, literally. I have gotten younger. Now, you could say, oh, well, that's your opinion. Well, it is my opinion. It's right. When I look in the mirror, I see a younger person. My skin's younger. I'm stronger. There's a lot of things that I can go into, which I don't have time for right now. You can get this in a special introductory offer. It's available for $50 a bottle. It normally sells for $80, and it's well worth it because anything that has resveratrol in is usually far, far less resveratrol than what's in this particular product, and it's not anywhere near as good. It may not even work for you. This stuff really works. And you can get the stuff you use for your animals for $35 an hour of a bottle. It's a little different, and it has, you know, different number of capsules in it, and those you just sprinkle on the pet's foods. And you can get that from foreveryoungproducts.com, 800-777-7850. Try it. You will be amazed at its effectiveness. I'm not kidding you about this. And I definitely use it. When I say I use something, I mean it. I'm not just telling you about it for the heck of it. Okay, so either one of those are available at the present time. If you want to get a hold of me, you can reach me at thoughts@whylifeis.com. That's the email address. Check out our general webpage. This is the group I'm a spiritual member of, the spiritual group. It's called agelesswisdom.com. Go to that site. You can also listen to some of these shows on that site, or you can go to the station itself and listen to shows there. So hopefully that all makes sense to you, and I hope this program has made some sense to you tonight. Anyway, we're out of time for right now. And I hope this holiday and holy day has made a great difference for you as it has for me, and you feel a greater sense of joy and oneness with all. And I hope that you have a great New Year as well. Now, New Year's is another kind of holiday. I wouldn't exactly call it a holy day, but I would call it a way to look forward in our planning for the future. We all need to be very concerned about our future because that's still in a questionable position as far as the way the world is at the present time. Please, please do everything you can to make this a better world. Until next time, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.